Okay, what I want to try to do in these next couple sessions is to build on the foundation that Keith just very aptly built. And I'm going to do a little contrast, and I'm going to actually draw from you, and I don't stand still behind lecterns very well, so I'll be back and forth, and I'll try to draw some points from you. And some of you, this is going to be a review for. You've seen me speak on this a little bit, this very beginning part before, so I'm going to go somewhat fast, and I only want to highlight on a couple of things. But if you've seen it before, frankly, I think it's worth seeing again, because it will be foundational for the things that then we want to do later on with our time here. So I want to, in this very first session, I want to contrast the way I believe business works today in the 21st century. I'm not going to get a show of hands, but I trust all of you have jobs or had jobs or hope to have a job. And so some of this will be, and you don't have to say it out loud, but you'll say it to yourself. Yep, he's right. Yep, that's right. Yep, that's right. And I want to contrast the way the business works in the world today from the way that business ought to work if we were to do work the way Jesus would want work to be done today. That's what we're going to do in this very first session. Just a contrast between the way work is today. Racked, broken, cursed, marred, all of those words, versus the way it ought to work. Or if Jesus were here, the way it would work. So, first question. The fundamental goal of business. What would you say business is about? Why do we have business and commerce today? Talk to me. What's business about?
Make money.
Make money. That's right. In fact, Milton Friedman, one of the most renowned economic minds and business minds, said that the goal of business is to make a profit, or profit optimization or maximization. That's what he taught. Well, so I would agree it's about making more profit. And I would, and for the sake of time, I'm just going to cut through. The more is continually improving. In business, if you've been there, it's all about continuous improvement. Whatever profit you made today is not going to be sufficient or adequate enough for tomorrow. It's all about continuous improvement in business. You don't stay in business if you aren't continually advancing and getting better in business. That's the significance of the more. Informed and illumined business, though, realize that you can't just focus on making a profit alone. Let me ask you a couple more questions that would lead you to a rather, this is kind of one of those duh things, but how does profit happen? How does profit happen? I admit, and I will agree, the goal is to make more profit, but how does profit happen? Talk to me.
Voluntary exchange. You get it a more cost-effective.
Right. Right, so there's an exchange. Exchange of what for what? You're right. Goods and services for?
To make profit.
Money.
Yeah.
Money, right? Right? So there's a business term for that, money, revenue. Right? So I used to do it like this, and I will teach right hand revenue. So when I do this again, I'm going to do some things here. Right hand, that's revenue. Revenue we get from a customer, that's the first half of the exchange, and it's in exchange for a goods or a service, that'd be the left hand, which costs something. So there's some materials, or there's some labor, or there's some inputs that are required to make the product or the service that the customer wants or the customer needs. And they're willing to pay for it because they need it. So they're going to pay for it, revenue, cost of the goods or service, left hand. And this is profit. Many business people, naive ones, that for sure will equate somehow revenue. We sold lots of stuff. All is good. Not so fast, Lee Corso might say. Not so fast. You got lots and lots of revenue, because if you got even more costs, you're upside down. That's a loss. This is a profit. Remember revenue, right hand. Revenue that are greater than the cost, that's a profit. All right? One little insert here. If any of you have been beaten over the head about cost reduction, cost reduction, cost reduction, if we had more time, I would get into this even in a greater sense. It's never, ever, 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 ever been about cost reduction, even though it seems like that's what the big goal is about, cost reduction. It's always been about increasing profit. Watch, costs, right? Cost reduction is this. What happens to profits if you reduce costs? In theory, profits will increase. In theory, have you ever seen where an instance where you decrease cost by reducing some customer service people or use a cheaper material, and now all of a sudden your customers, who are not stupid, figure out that this is not as satisfying a product and they don't want as much of your products before, so you reduce cost, but you also reduce revenues even more? Some of the dumbest things in business today are done out of the name of this holy grail, cost reduction, and it never was about cost reduction. It was always about increasing profits, except you cannot separate profits from the second part, which is the fundamental goal of business, which is satisfying customers, because it's the customers that give you the revenue that's the top half of profit. Get it? You can't separate those two. Everybody get me? Right? So, now, and in the 1980s, I was there. Some of you weren't even born yet, but I was there, and that's when business started to learn, you know what? You need to satisfy customers, because otherwise they won't give you the revenue half of that exchange. They'll go to someplace else who's making a higher quality or a better product or service, giving you better. And therefore, they'll pay more. Do people pay more for a Lexus than they do a Toyota? The answer is yes. People will pay for quality. They will pay for customer service. How many of you have paid more for a particular product because you were able to get it faster, or you're able to get it right now, rather than having to wait for it? You don't need to raise your hands, but just about every one of you do that. Why? Because we are customers, and we want to be satisfied. Now, there's one last piece to this one, and a more enlightened business crowd began to understand. It started in the 1990s. Companies like Federal Express and others started to realize that, you know what, besides the customer is king and we need to increase our quality and customer service, a profound question was asked and answered. Who is it that designs those products that satisfy the customers? And who is it that actually delivers the product or the service to the customer? Who is it that actually makes the quality product? Answer? Employees. And you know what? Today, I'm from a different generation than you. Some of those books that are on that list or talk about generations and different generations. I'm from the generation, I'm a baby boomer, right? Baby boomers, the average of a baby boomer is 3 to 6 jobs in their career. That's the average for a baby boomer, 3 to 6. All right, skip 2 generations. Most of you are millennials. Right? You know what the average for a millennial is? Right? By the way, my father's generation, that would be the World War II generation, there was 1 to 3. That was the average number of jobs that they had, a World War II generation. Many of them, if you know your great-grandfathers, they would have, in many cases, had one job. They went, and that's where they worked for their entire careers. My dad was one of those. He had 3 jobs. He was right in the average. I'm kind of getting to just about the end of my 6. So what about you millennials?
13 to 17.
Yeah, and that's by the time you're 38. 13. Well, wait a minute. Time out. What do you mean 38? you haven't been out there long enough for us to be able to make an accurate projection beyond your age of 38. But that's the average. That's a projected average. And if you want some of those books, they're the Barna group books, it will actually take you to more studies on that particular regard. Now, why did I insert that one little piece? Here's the point. Businesses have learned that if you don't satisfy or prosper employees, they're not going to be your employee very long. How much does it cost to train and or just to go recruit and hire an employee? It's a lot of money. Estimates are anywhere from $25,000 to $75,000 to just to go out and recruit and to hire and to train and to place an employee. And now they leave and you got to spend it all over again. And that doesn't count all of the losses in productivity while you're waiting to find that next person. Now there's some companies becoming quite good at it, but the really informed ones are ones, why don't we get good employees and keep them? What a novel idea. So what about that? Those averages for millennials. What if we could actually find good people, hire them, and then keep them? How does that happen? And so, I submit to you, in business, there are three legs to the stool, and it isn't just about making a profit. It is also about, while satisfying customers, because you can't make a profit without satisfying customers, and you can't satisfy your customers without high-performing workforce employees. Everybody get me? That's business. This is what the top two, I will acknowledge, all business schools teach. Some of the better business schools are now starting to teach the third leg, that prospering employees, because it's true. It's true. And it's a different world. And when you were dealing with baby boomers and they didn't leave, it wasn't that big of a deal. We're not dealing with baby boomers anymore. We're leaving the scene. You guys are taking our place. And with the turnover, I used to say this, you looking around in a room, I would sometimes speak, look around in the room, and 25% of you haven't had your first anniversary with this particular company yet. 25% turnover. In 4 years, businesses will completely turn over their workforce. The costs are astronomical. Not to mention, if you want to talk about continuity of operations. Okay, now, here's a model. How does business actually work? Building on what I just sold you, I turn over in a couple pages, and I'm going to make a couple contrasts here. And for the sake of time, this is how I believe business actually works. And some Bible verses to back me up so you don't have to believe me. Well, that's your opinion. That's what you say, Mr. Miller. No, actually, the Bible says what I'm saying as well. Again, those people, customers, they want stuff. And they're willing to pay for it, but what are they trying to do? They're trying to get the best deal they possibly can. One of my favorite verses in the Proverbs is Proverbs 20, verse 14. It is not, saith the buyer. It is not. Bad. Nah, too much price. Not enough quality. But it is not, saith the buyer. Then he goeth his way and boasteth therein. What does that mean? Does that mean that he just went his way and says, man, I gave that guy a piece of my mind. Guy was trying to jip me. That's not what the verse means. What the verse means is, look what a good deal I got. Because you see, there was some transaction that was going on there. And maybe the guy lowered his price. Maybe he did agree to put in some additional whatever or threw in the high performance package on the car, and so great, a deal was made, and then he went and boasted therein that there was a deal made. You see, it actually captures that one simple little verse, captures the way the marketplace works. We all do it. You do. If you're honest, you're trying to get the best possible deal that you can. What do you mean by the best possible deal? Paying the lowest price, or getting the highest performance, or ideally both. That's what you want. And if you do, you'll be satisfied. The satisfied customers. Businesses get that. That's why they are now working for trying to reduce their price, their costs, and or to increase the performance of their product. That's the continuous improvement. You can't stay in business if you aren't doing that. Everybody with me? Now, again, you go on the other side. These people that are actually designing those products to be high performance and or low cost are those employees. And why do they do that? Do they just come in and they do it but just out of sheer gratification? It's like, I really want to help. Or do they do it because it's a job and it maybe utilizes some of my skills and abilities and my career goals and growth? And the answer is yes to all of the above. How many of you are going to college? Or take college classes right now? I would assume some, right? And that you have to pay for that, right? And so my guess is most or all of you also have a job. And you actually would like to get as paid as much as you can for that job so you can pay for your college school bills and so forth and so forth. Employees would like to get paid as much as they can. And if you don't believe it, we're not going to take the time, but if you would read Matthew chapter 20, verses 1 to 15, that is the parable. And by the way, just let me insert one thing here. The parables, I think about 85% or more of the parables are rooted in, or the setting is, are you ready? Business and commerce. Who was Jesus teaching when he used the parables? He was, I grant you, he was teaching spiritual truths. But he was teaching spiritual truths. That's what was going on in that Matthew chapter 20 passage. He was teaching a spiritual truth, but he was teaching a spiritual truth out of a business and commerce reality. A truth. Because you can't make a spiritual truth out of a real world falsity. It won't work. It would fall apart. They can say, well, wait a minute, man. That's not true. And therefore, why should I believe the spiritual truth that you're trying to teach me, Jesus? You see, Jesus taught business and commercial people. That's what he was doing. And that's what he was doing right in there. And that particular passage talks about, this is the one where the workers got, and they worked a whole day and they got paid a penny. And the ones that worked half a day and they got paid a penny. And the guys who only worked an hour, they got paid a penny. That's what that is. And the guys that got worked the whole day go, hey, what? You paid him a penny and you paid them a penny. And I worked the whole day and you're going to pay me a penny. What? That's not right. That's the Dave Miller paraphrase. What? But that's what was going on. Well, they're looking to get paid as much as they can, right? And if you're honest, really honest, that's you. That's me. That's where we are at. Well, not totally, Dave. I'm interested in my career and utilizing my skills and ability. Okay, fine. Right? So that second one looks at career growth, and you can just read it on your own. That's why I gave you the particular in those verses. That was the one about the rich man in the vineyard, and he goes away and slaying, and then he sends his nobleman to get, and here comes the nobleman's son. We'll take him out and then we can have the vineyard on our own. Talk about career growth. Oh, well, none of us. Well, we wouldn't do that. Well, Jesus taught it. It evidently was at least a possibility for people. Look, if you're really honest, you would like to advance your career and get paid as much as you can. And if you do, you'll be satisfied. Well, let's look at this third people and the business themselves. And business owners will invest their capital, or they'll invest their money to maximize profits or maximize ROI. For those of you who maybe don't know business TLAs, return on investment. So they've invested money and they would like to maximize the return on their investment. They do that largely by maximizing profits. And if they do, they too would be satisfied. Now, there's a common denominator in all three of these, if you will, constituent groups in this simple, and I admit it's a simple business model, but it is accurate, and that is satisfaction, satisfaction, satisfaction. Everybody in the business world, it's almost like Pastor's series that he's doing on Judges, and everybody is doing right in their own eyes. Everybody's trying to get satisfied. But if everybody is just looking out for themselves, the employees and the employers, and this is very typical the way business works today. It is. Boy, pretty cynical, Dave. Maybe. Or that this is, at least in part, I submit large part, the way business works today. I want to ask you a key question. Okay, but get this. This is the way the business works where you work, at least in part. How many of you ever traveled abroad? Right? If you traveled abroad, or were you no longer an American when you traveled abroad? Sorry. Yeah. There may be a few exceptions, right? But I've had the great pleasure of traveling abroad. But that didn't keep me from being American, even though I wasn't in America. I'm still an American. Everybody get me? Because I'm in a foreign land doesn't make me non-American or un-American. I'm still an American. Everybody get it? Took my wife along sometimes, and it's funny. Some of you may do this too. She and I both caught one another doing this when we were traveling abroad, and we sort of slip into this, we called it stupid fake accent. You start talking like you're a French person, like they're going to understand your broken English better if you say it with a French accent. So we kid one another, stupid American with a fake accent. Sorry for that tangent. But it was something I just thought of that when I was actually preparing this before, that Jamie and I would tease one another, stupid American with a fake accent. Well, you're always an American, no matter where you're at. You're an American because you were born in America, or you were born to American citizen parents, right? All right? So the question I have for you is Jesus your king? Rhetorical question, looking around this group and knowing who's here. Of course, Jesus is your king. But a little thing about kings. Kings have kingdoms. Kings have kingdoms. Kings have subjects or citizens or kingdom dwellers. Kings rule and reign. Kings lead and the citizens follow their example. Is there any time that you are not a Christian? Is there any time in your 24/7 week that you are not a subject of King Jesus? How many of you have prayed this prayer? Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. What's the rest? On earth as it is in heaven. Look, guys, as Keith so aptly just talked about, and I'm now sitting right on top of the theological truth that he just took us through. Is there any time in your 168 hours in the week that you're not a subject of Jesus, your King? So, when you go into that ugly business world that we just talked about, and it is cursed, and it is marred, and it is messed up, does that mean that you... Well, I'm not supposed to... I'm in foreign... it's like, well, the prince of the power of the air, he's actually the king in the business world today. True. But we just said that Jesus is our king, and it's a 24/7, 168-hour week proposition. And you know what? Just because you're going out into a messed up business world doesn't mean you're any less called, as we talked about just a minute ago, called to be his co-worker, to follow his example. Everybody with me? So let's look at now a divine design, a business, where how I submit business ought to work according to the scriptures. And I've changed this ever so slightly, and it's now called a biblical business model. And there's lots of verses here, some of which those verses are ones that Keith actually just talked about, like Colossians 4:1 and Colossians 3:24 and 25, the parallel passage, which is Ephesians 6:5 and 8, and also this Ephesians 6:9. And you'll notice that these verses are aimed at the owners and employers and managers, and those verses at the employees, and then the customers over here. And oh, by the way, there's that same verse again, my favorite verse, because as I said, it could be looked at in a cynical way, like, yeah, everybody's they're just trying to get their own, and they're just trying to get their best deal, but they actually did get a deal, and they did buy the product. But what I want to do is, in all these verses, and for the sake of time, we're not going to look at all of them, but I want to look at these here in the middle. So somebody turn, please, to, and I'm going to interrupt you as you read it, but somebody turn to Deuteronomy chapter 10, verses 12 and 13, and then somebody else look at Deuteronomy chapter 11, just across the page, no doubt, in your Bible, to Deuteronomy chapter 11, 13 to 17. And one more person, I want you to look at Matthew chapter 22. You might want to write that down on the model because I didn't put that in here, but I frequently do that. Matthew chapter 22, 37 to 40. Okay? Now, Deuteronomy chapter 10, and I'm going to interrupt you, so just whoever it is that somebody who wants to read it, and I'm so, forgive me in advance, I'm going to interrupt you on purpose, but go ahead.
So Deuteronomy 10, 12.
Right.
13. Yep. Now Israel, what does the Lord
Stop. Told you I was going to interrupt. Now Israel. Who's Israel? In the context, this is Deuteronomy. This is right before they're getting ready to go into the promised land. Who is he's talking about? In this particular verse, now Israel. Now hear, O Israel. Who is Israel? God's people, right? Those subjects of God, right? It's God's people he's talking to. Okay, so God's people. Or you can put your name in there. Now, young men of Colonial Hills Baptist Church. Read it that way. Okay. I like it that way.
Now, young men of Colonial Hills Baptist Church, what does the Lord your God require from you? But to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, and love him, and to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. And to keep the Lord's commandments and his statutes, which I'm commanding you today for your good.
You know, sometimes a lot of people, like, all these commandments and all these rules, and I was like, oh man, it's so burdensome. He says it's for our good. Because it is. How do you know it is? Okay, somebody now read the Deuteronomy chapter 11 passage. Yep, I'm going to interrupt you right at verse 16.
And if you will indeed obey my commandments that I command you today, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart.
Stop right there. Obey the commandments. In the Hebrew, it's the exact same words right here. So what he just said, he gave us commandments for our good. And if you'll obey, go read it again, sorry.
If you will indeed obey my commandments that I command you today, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, he will give the rain for your land in its season, the early rain and the later rain, that you may gather in your grain and your wine and your oil. And he will give grass in your fields for your livestock, and you shall eat and be full.
All right, stop right there. Because that's the end of 15, right?
Yeah.
Stop right there for a minute. So you're saying, yeah, that's rather interesting, but what does that have to do with me in 2016? On the north side of Indianapolis. What does that have to do with me? Here's what it has to do. It has everything to do with you. Right? What was the economy at the time of this writing? Who is he writing to again? Hear, O Israel. He's writing to the Israelites. Who were they? What were they? What was their economy?
Agriculture.
They were herdsmen and they were farmers. And he's talking about blessing you in your business. Right? if, this conditional blessing in your business, if you will obey those commandments that I gave you this day for your good. What do you mean for your good? I just explained it to you. If for your good, if you will do these commandments which I've given you for your good, I'll bless you. If you don't believe that, now read verses 16 and 17. Because I submit verse 16 is a hinge verse. Check it out.
Take care lest your heart be deceived and you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. Then the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you and he will shut up the heavens so that there will be no rain and the land will yield no fruit and you will perish quickly off the good land that the Lord is giving you.
Can I make it any more clear? That, look, he gave it for our good, that he might bless us. But then he warns us, but don't be turned aside to the idols of, like, making too much profit, or I need to make more money so that I can have a greater career, and or that I can buy that speedboat or that second jet ski, or whatever it is that becomes an idol of your heart. It could just be, it's none of that material stuff, I'm not a materialist, but I sure like to have that prestige and power of advanced career. Careful. Those idols of your heart are the very idols that he's warning us against. Now, Matthew chapter 22, verses 37 and following. Because I want to even be more pointed when we look at those commandments that he gives us this day for our good. Check it out.
Jesus said unto him, thou shalt love.
Stop. Sorry. That's the way I do. Sorry. This is an answer. Somebody, one of the scribes asked him, Rabbi, what is the greatest, what would you say is the greatest commandment? All right, here comes the answer from Jesus.
Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets.
Okay. So those commandments that he gave us for our good, he summarizes them into two simple. It's like if you haven't memorized that particular verse, I submit to you, memorize it. Remember Matthew chapter 22, verse 37. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, mind, and soul, for this is the greatest commandment. And the second unlike to the first, love thy neighbor as thyself. Okay? Now how does it? Store that. How does that play out in the business world? Well, if you are now loving the Lord, and as Keith so aptly talked about, you're going to actually work as unto the Lord now over here, aren't you? And you'll be more conscientious, and you'll be more committed in your service, and you'll be more dependable. And you're not necessarily going to be so concerned about how much you're going to get paid, because as Keith taught you, you'll get paid fairly. If you're a good employee, do good employees get paid? The answer is yes, they do. In fact, as I just made mention of today in 2016, good employees, they want to hold on to you. They may fawn all over you just so that you won't become the competitor or somebody else's employee. And if that's not the case, then they're one of those uninformed businesses that don't get that it's costing them big time not to hold on to their good employees. So go find another employer that will be more informed and more enlightened and will want to hold on to you. It's the truth. It's business. But it's also the Bible. It is. Over here. You know what? These people right over here, they will give you a good deal. And they, what about these guys down here? Check it out. Right? Feedback. They'll give you. Anybody ever heard of the term called customer loyalty? All of you have. How does customer loyalty happen? Exactly. You know what? This is the way I answer a question. I've used it over and over and over again. And I make this point. How does customer loyalty happen? Because all businesses want loyal customers. They do. But you know what? I tell them, so you can have loyal customers. But this is the way it works. You need to first be loyal to the customers. Then they'll be loyal back. How do we do that? You give them the products and services in increasing performance and in better price and quality and delivery than you did the year before. Because if you don't, somebody else is trying to steal your customers' money. That's the antithesis of loyal customers or ones that are disloyal or will go to another. But you don't have to be succumbed to disloyal customers. Just be loyal to them first. Everybody get it? And that's what you get then. If you're loyal to your employees and they design better products and give better performance, and then your customers will be more loyal to you, and then you can afford to actually compensate and give them a better workforce and be able to pay for the latest and greatest in tools and what they need to be able to do their part. And you see how this goes. And if you can make that thing spin in a counterclockwise, like, guess what? You're going to be one of the leaders of the pack. You'll be fulfilling the mandates of Scripture. Because that's really at the very heart of the way God wants it to be. Stay tuned. We're going to actually get to talk about this a little bit more. Keith said that there were two things that Jesus wanted. I'm going to give you a third one, but stay tuned. There's a third thing that I think that Jesus wants out of our work. It's coming. It's right in here. Okay. And for some of you, you're saying, well, that's a rather simplified business model, Dave. I acknowledge it is. But if I made it more complicated, we'd have to be here all night and then tomorrow, and I don't expect anybody to want to give up their weekends. But business actually doesn't work in this vacuum between employees and customers and owners and managers. There are other stakeholders that are involved. And that's why in purple there, in a broader sense, the business operates in a community, does. And it operates in a community, and there are financial stakeholders. Sometimes they're one and the same. Small businesses, the owner and or the employers or managers are one and the same financial stakeholders. But if you work in a corporation, there are financial stakeholders, and they have a, that's why they're called stakeholders, they have a stake in the business. And so you need to actually honor those stakeholders as well. And you have suppliers and contractors and neighboring businesses that are proximal. That's the word I like to use. They're proximal businesses. They maybe share the same infrastructures, and they share the same parking lots and or the same police force and fire departments, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they do have a stake in how your business works. And on and so on it goes. And then there's the community itself in which a business and does. Does Indianapolis or the North Side have any stake in if a major employer like IU Health, if Indiana University just decided to close up all of its med school and all the hospitals and clinics, would there be an effect on the North Side of Indianapolis? Oh, yeah. Huge. Huge. They would have a big effect and an impact. What about governments and regulations? Now get this. I'm going to plant a seed. We'll be back to visit this one. If businesses worked more as Jesus would want businesses to work, would we need as much regulation? Would we need as much governmental oversight? Would we need as much of that as we have today when, as I just mentioned a moment ago, business is wrecked? It's messed up. And to keep it from being more messed up than it already is, we have government regulations, right? Not to mention that we have to pay taxes and we have to pay for all of that infrastructure that I mentioned. And so we have government, we have regulations, but I submit they have a stake in business, but their stake could be greatly affected and impacted if we would just figure out how to do business the way Jesus, the way God actually designed business to work.